Back in March of 1990, three guys were sitting around a bar in Moorhead, Minnesota, and they were drinking, and they were drinking, and they were drinking for 6, 7, 8 hours. Norm had at least a dozen, maybe as many as 20 rum and cokes. Bob and Joe shared beer, at least 6 pitchers of beer between them. It was the night before a flight, and they wanted to get ready. But in the wrong way, because the next morning they were not just passengers on that flight, they were the flight crew flying that plane from Fargo, North Dakota to Minneapolis. Fortunately, the plane landed without incident. The 91 passengers probably didn't even know during their 50 minutes on board that their flight crew had been drinking less than 10 hours before their flight in violation of FAA guidelines. But when the FAA found out about it, revoked their licenses, and the three of them ended up going to prison. Joe Balzer was the flight engineer on board that flight and joins me now to talk about that experience, which he recounts in a new book called Flying Drunk. Hi, Joe. How are you this morning?
Good morning to you, Paul. Beautiful day here. Good to be alive. Good to be sober.
I should say that not only are you sober, but you're actually back in the airline business flying for American now, right?
Yeah, American Airlines, wonderful airline, fantastic EAP program at American Airlines. We take care of people up here, and we get people into recovery and get them back in the cockpit and sober and flying and healthy. Alcoholism is a disease with a pathology and a neurochemistry, and the FAA knows that, and American Airlines knows that, and we get people help and get them back flying safe.
So what kind of guarantees are there? And I ask you this because I'm going to be flying not an American, but one of your competitors this Friday, and I would like some reassurance that I'm not going to run into a flight where you, or I'm not you in particular, but somebody like you and the way you were back in 1990 would be sitting in that pilot seat. How do we avoid that? How do I get reassured that I'm not going to run into that same situation as a passenger?
I think the good news is prior to 1972, you might have had much, much higher odds of flying with a pilot who was either flying with a hangover or flying with too much alcohol in his system. In those days, pilots would enable one another. If someone came to work, they had too much to drink. The stories that I've been told, people were put in the seat and gotten home. If a pilot was discovered prior to 1972 flying, then he lost his career. It was over for life. So what happens when we have that type of a punitive approach is people hide it. They're sick. If they're drinking alcoholically, they're going to hide it. They're going to binge drink, and their friends are going to get them home because they don't want them to lose their jobs. The good news is today, and after 1972, Dr. Audie Davis, along with dedicated people, Dr. Audie Davis, by the way, was the chief aerosurgeon for the FAA. For 37 years. He wrote the foreword to Flying Drunk, and a wonderful man. He's dedicated his life to helping people get into recovery, stay into recovery. Over 4,000 pilots have been rehabilitated since 1972. The most successful rehabilitation program in the world. Corporate America aspires to do what we do with airline pilots, and the success has been just far beyond what they'd ever imagined. We monitor one another. We're our brother's keeper. We help educate people about alcoholism, what it is, what to look for. And, as a result, the skies are much safer today. And you don't hear about these things happening probably as often as they did in the past.
Joe, when you were caught flying drunk that day with Norm and Bob on that Northwest flight, I know that that was not the first time you were a little bit under the weather, let's say, right?
Yes. And what I do in the book, Paul, is I'm just trying to be very honest with people because I'm hoping that perhaps if they do some soul searching, they might find some parallels in my book in their own life. They might be on the fence, wondering whether or not they're an alcoholic or not. So much shame attached to this disease. I did not want to be labeled an alcoholic, so I did everything in my power not to go to 12-step meetings, not to do the reading. So much pain from my childhood that I was afraid to face. My dad was an alcoholic, and I just didn't want to face any of those things. Addiction was in the driver's seat, not clear thinking. So here I was, I had way too much to drink the night before, showed up for the flight, and the whole idea in my mind, complete the mission. And the whole idea in the past, after I'd been sober for 3 years after the Northwest incident, my life had completely fallen apart. I was out of prison, going through lots of rejection, working for minimum wage. The prison experience was absolutely horrible. But I had clarity, and I was looking back and doing inventories, personal inventories, and I'd remember there were two different times that I could remember at Eastern Airlines where I had gone out the night before. I could not remember how I got back. I could not remember how I got, you know, from the bar or the restaurant back to the hotel. Didn't remember any of those things, and, you know, flew that the following day in bad shape. And, you know, that's something that, you know, really helped convince me that I was an alcoholic. Three distinct stages of the disease, and normally we think, well, you know, Uncle Harry or Aunt Sally is an alcoholic. Well, normally most people, when they see that, those people are in stage three alcoholism, latter stage alcoholism, where people are drinking every day, they're drinking large amounts of alcohol. In stage one, you wouldn't know. And the person's having some blackouts, which started with me in college. And, you know, very, very gentle indications. So for me, I really had to do a lot of reading and research. And once I had that clarity, the shame went away, and I realized that I had a disease. And I also realized that, you know, the cure for the disease, and I use that word very carefully, is total abstinence. I will never be able to return to drinking. I never could drink normally. I didn't know that. But that's what alcoholism is.
Joe, once you got sober and tried to get back into the airline industry, which you've now done successfully, did you ever get into the cockpit or onto the jetway, at least, with somebody who you looked over at and said, this guy shouldn't be flying?
Not at American Airlines. That has not happened. Now, I think the other day when we did the interview in Chicago, I was explaining to you just a real bad situation for me was when I got my first flying job, which was a miracle. A company in Dallas had offered me a position, Kitty Hawk Airlines, and I went down. My first assignment was in El Paso, and there were pilots down there who were drinking quite heavily, and coming back staggering drunk at 3:30 in the morning, and they had to fly at 7 o'clock. And I had to tell those guys, look, you know, I can't fly with you guys. I'm going to have to sit you down. I'm going to have to tell you this story about what happened to me. And, you know, at that time, I'd been sober for several years, tried to explain to them, you know, a little bit about my story, my situation, but absolutely there was no way that I was going to get into the cockpit with somebody who had alcohol in their system. Well, they didn't like that, and they even told me that they were going to ruin my life, and I said, well, that's kind of funny. You know, my life's already been ruined. I don't know what you're going to do to me, but I'm just telling you right now, it's real simple. It's black and white. I'm not piling into an aircraft with you and getting into a lot of trouble. Another place where it happened was flying Learjets out of Dallas, Texas, and I got checked out there as a captain, and I suspected that the director of operations was very sick, drinking just way too much. He was drinking every day. I'm convinced that he was in latter stage 3 alcoholism. Tried to help him. You know, he just didn't want to have anything to do with it. You know, he ended up, he's not alive anymore. He's gone. But at American Airlines, I have not had that experience. And the good news is I think it is a direct reflection to the dedication that many of the large airlines, American, United, Delta, Southwest, have toward people and toward recovery. The program is so good that we, you know, when people know that their career's not over, and we do an intervention on them, they have that intrinsic motivation of keeping their job. So they go forward and get the help.
Well, Joe, if I'm on an American Airlines flight, and I do fly often, and I do occasionally fly American, if I'm on a flight and I hear that announcement that our pilot today is Joe Balzer, I'm going to come up and shake your hand for getting your life back together and also being one of those who will turn to other people and say, you should not be flying, and trying to do something about it. The book is called Flying Drunk, The True Story of a Northwest Airlines Flight, 3 Drunk Pilots, and 1 Man's Fight for Redemption. Joe Balzer, now a pilot for American Airlines. Thanks for your time this morning. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Paul. I really appreciate the invite back. And if anyone has any further questions, they could go to flyingdrunk.com. I've got some wonderful links there to some very helpful websites. And, you know, they don't have to be on the fence. There are solutions to this number one public health issue in America, alcoholism. And I just hope people can get a little hope from my book. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. Paul Harris from McGraw-Millhaven on the Big 550 KTRS.